Across the bay from Port Townsend is a narrow little hunk of land called Indian Island. It's a crucial component of that great big machine known as the Pacific Northwest Navy Fleet. Ships stop there to load up before heading out to the open ocean. But it's also hugely significant to another group of people, Puget Sound area tribes. Like most things, it belonged to them before it became non-Indian property, but ever so slowly, Indian Island is beginning to open up to its original inhabitants. 88.5's Ariel Van Cleve went to the island to learn more of its complicated story.
My tour of Indian Island was not what I was expecting at all. It's so quiet and peaceful there. The place feels old, and I really got that feeling when we walked along the beach that was covered, seriously, covered in shells. You couldn't avoid stepping on them if you tried.
All along, that's all shell midden from hundreds of years of this being a fishing camp for the tribes.
That's Rocky Pulley. He's the commanding officer of Naval Magazine Indian Island.
And it goes down, you can dig down 10 feet, and that's how much it's built into the soils of this piece of property right here.
The shells don't just go down 10 feet deep, they also go about 100 feet across this beach where we were standing. It's impressive and untouched. You kind of forget you're on a naval installation. But how exactly did it go from a tribal village to a military base? Well, look, you might not be all that surprised since the whole idea of tribes losing their land isn't exactly new, though in this case, it's a bit different. The military and native people are trying to forge a relationship where the parties involved have two very different interests, but it's a test to see if they can actually coexist on this little piece of land off the Washington coast.
But, you know, what an office, really.
You guys are a little spoiled here.
It doesn't suck to work here.
We'll get more into this relationship in just a bit. First, though, a brief history lesson. Indian Island is the ancestral home of the Chemicum tribe. Then it was later occupied by the Sklallams. Immigrants from Europe claimed parts of the land after the Sklallams signed a treaty in 1855 that forced them to relocate. Though the chief actually bought up about 15 acres himself to hold claim to the land. The last family to own parcels there sold it off in 1939 to the current owner, the Navy. The sale effectively cut off access to the tribes for most of the 20th century. Now, the installation was a big deal during World War II. Crews would load up ships heading to the Pacific while also guarding the Puget Sound region. It's still an important location for the Navy. It's the only deep water facility on the West Coast with no access restrictions like bridges or shallow water. And as you'd expect, Commander Pulley takes this history seriously.
The vast responsibility that I have as a commanding officer, not only to the 160 people that work on board this installation on a daily basis, but the history and the upkeep of the installation, the ground itself, it weighs on me. If I leave this installation and my impact is in a negative sense, I affect everything going forward.
Those 160 people do things like load and unload ships, fight fires, and do a lot of environmental work. You see, while the island itself is roughly 2,700 acres, the Navy only uses a sliver of the land, leaving the majority of the island largely untouched. The magazine's environmental manager is Bill Kalina. He explains that gives the island the feel of a wildlife refuge with deer, old growth trees, and 10 eagle nests.
We have large mature conifer trees that will support the weight of a nest. Some of the nests weigh 2 tons. So to find trees with the heavy limbs that will support the weight of that, it's pretty hard to find in areas that have been developed and clear cut or logged, you know, many times over. Plus they have the pristine beaches where they forage.
But this is the place where the histories collide. There's the legacy of the native inhabitants, which stretches back centuries, and the mess left behind by its more recent tenants. We're standing in what used to be a huge landfill, but now it's covered in tall grass and dotted with trees. Kalina sweeps his arm to show a protected spot along the shore that has ties to the tribe.
This was the home of Lahaina, the Sklallam chief. He lived on this point, which is Boggy Spit, which was for thousands of years a fish camp. There's shell middens here, you know, there's artifacts that were recovered here over the years during excavations. So we bring some of these tribal youth groups down here from the Sklallam tribe. They come and visit this site to see where the chief, the prince lived, Prince of Wales, and also go and look at the fish camp and explain why this was a fish camp. So they learn about their heritage and their history, and this was an important place for the Sklallams, and then prior to them, the Chimicums.
So what was once the chief's home became a landfill, and then Kalina and his team worked to restore it to what it once was. It's not perfect by any means, but they're making it work. The tribe's connection to this land runs deep. It's a food source, but also a place to harvest cedar and perform ceremonies. And as Laura Price explains, this island was considered to be in the heart of Sklallam territory. Price is the arts and cultural history director of the Port Gamble tribe, which is a band of the Sklallam people.
That's where the gatherings happened. That's where the ceremonies took place. When we had a big naming ceremony or some other important event, you know, people come from all over, but that was the central hub.
So this is about more than just accessing land. This is how the tribe is able to connect to and share its culture. And they weren't permitted to do that for a very long time. But then something changed a few decades ago. The thinking about treaty rights began evolving, and around that same time, the Navy started negotiating with the tribes to let the members onto the island for certain purposes. The initial agreement restored the tribe's treaty rights, harvesting naturally occurring shellfish. But the parties go back to the negotiating table every year, and as Commander Pulley explains, the talks have changed. They began to allow cedar harvests again. And last summer, tribal youth were able to land their canoes for the first time in more than 80 years.
What has happened through the course of time is, you know, with those agreements and just being good neighbors, we've allowed that to happen on the installation as far as teaching and training the youth. So anytime that we can go out and improve those relationships and keep that culture going, you know, for the tribes, I'm all for it.
It's an unusual partnership. Kelly Sullivan, who's the executive director for the Port Gamble Sklallam tribe, says in a way, she's kind of glad it's the Navy they're working with.
If it weren't for the Navy, we could have 50 rich people living there and not have access to anything. These artifacts we find would be gone.
But of course, it cuts both ways. The same restrictions that protected the land from development have also kept the tribe out. And that leaves Sullivan feeling conflicted. Even though they can visit the island, it's still under lock and key. So much so that tribal members are required to go through intensive background checks in order to access the shores for fishing or harvesting every time they visit. They have to do itineraries, detailed lists. If you don't have an ID, it's a no-go. You can't get on the island. Sullivan says it can be cumbersome.
We have elders who are traditional and want face-to-face contact, and they don't want to be called every 6 months if they want to go visit the place, and it feels wrong.
It's worth noting I did not have to go through a background check when I visited the island, and that actually caused a little tension. I requested that the tribal officials be allowed to join me for my tour of the island, and was politely told no. Meanwhile, members of the tribe were harvesting cedar bark at the exact time I was on the island with the naval commander, but I wasn't allowed to meet with them. Instead, I spoke to Sullivan and Price later at the Port Gamble government campus in Kingston. They said the fact that a Seattle reporter had fewer hoops to jump through than the island's ancestral owners was annoying. But while the relationship can be frustrating, Price feels it's all worth it. She sees it as a way for her to honor her ancestors.
When you step over there and you go to some of those beaches, it almost feels like you're going back in time, and you get to see what the landscape actually is supposed to look like. When I go to places that haven't been touched by our Sklallam people for a long time, I feel like we're letting our ancestors know that we have survived, that all their work and effort has paid off.
Price says it's this generation's way of saying we're still here. And Sullivan says yes, she knows that at the end of the day, the Navy owns the land, and they're doing the neighborly thing of sharing it with the tribe. Still.
Sometimes it feels a little bit like a losing battle when you're constantly fighting and you're constantly negotiating. Whether it's a good relationship or not, it eats at you and it wears at you and it never lets you rest.
So the Navy says this place is too important to let go, but it's also too important to the tribe to not fight for it. They haven't struck the perfect compromise yet, but both sides say they'll keep working at it.